Welcome back to Dakota Midday. I'm Lori Walsh. In roughly 3 weeks, singer, songwriter, musician, and South Dakota native Haley Bonner embarks on a tour that will take her from the Midwest through the northeastern United States and then to Europe for 13 more dates. The tour is in support of Bonner's new CD, Impossible Dream, which was released earlier this month. In a recent interview with Stereogum, Bonner said, she writes from what is born of her own set of memories and ideas. Once they are released into the world, they do not belong to her anymore. The interpretation is that of the listener. Therefore, the stories are yours. St. Paul, Minnesota is now home for Bonner and her young daughter. Eau Claire, Wisconsin is the closest stop on her upcoming tour, but Bonner returned to her childhood home of Rapid City just after the release of her latest CD. There, she visited with SDPB News Director Charles Michael Ray, who has had the opportunity to see Bonner's career blossom over the last 15 years.
Haley Bonner, thanks for joining us in the studio today. It's really great to have you here.
Of course. I'm very happy that you are the one that gets to do the interview time around.
I'm very happy to do the interview with you. I know we've had you on our airwaves here in South Dakota.
Yes.
Public Broadcasting many times. It's always so awesome to have you in the studio. And I want to start by asking about this latest album. And you read on your website, this album isn't really about one story or theme, but there's 10 songs on the album, and each song really contains an individual story. And one of those songs, I guess, is about growing up in the Black Hills. The track titled Hometown, mm-hmm. Which I want to play just a little bit of right here.
Sure.
Song about how does it relate to the Black Hills, and how did growing up in the Black Hills influence some of your songwriting, including this song?
Well, I think the whole idea of that song is the old, like, you can take the girl out of the small town, can't take the small town out of the girl. It's basically like you, wherever you grow up, wherever you spend the majority of your time, that has an impact on you. And I don't think that it's limited just to where you spend the first part of your life, obviously, but that's the most formative part. And so although I didn't really specifically talk about the Black Hills so much, I mean, I did say like a beautiful ring of black fire. That's kind of the only indication that it's about that, other than if you knew where I grew up here. Yeah.
What is it about the Black Hills or this place that gives it that hometown feeling for you, or that brings you back to where you came from in a way? I mean, is there a way to describe that, other than obviously you describe it in your songwriting, but is there a way to describe that?
You know, I ask myself, what is it about this place a lot? And even when I come back here, I think that's why I love it so much, is because I don't think I'll ever fully understand that. It's a feeling, and it's kind of like trying to describe something that is invisible and wordless, and it doesn't have like a, you know, you can't fit it into a box and say, well, I really like it there because I love the rally, and I love this street or that street, or I love the way, you know, it's like, well, it has to do with everything that's tangible, like physically to me, seeing it and feeling it in the air and the people here. And it's just, it's very unique. And I think that a lot of people probably feel that about where they grew up, but growing up here, I mean, this place is very unique. It's not quite the West, but it's like the beginning of the West. And so I live, you know, 8.5 hours east of here, and Minnesota is gorgeous, and Wisconsin's gorgeous. They're beautiful, but they have none of this similar kind of rugged very like craggy rocks, and it's just, it's very fierce and quiet at the same time, which is what I love about it.
Yeah. You also read on your website that what you write is, quote, born out of my own set of memories and ideas. And once they're released into the world, they do not belong to me anymore. You're sort of giving these songs to people and allowing the audience to interpret them.
Mm-hmm.
What's the balance as a songwriter between sort of putting something out there that's abstract that you allow the audience to interpret and making a statement, making a concrete, you know, this is what I want to say as a songwriter? Do you struggle with that balance at all? Do you think about it at all? I'm just curious.
Not really. I mean, I think rather than using direct words as a statement, I guess, especially with this set of songs, I can say there were several times when I thought, you know, I'm going to write a song about being queer in a small town and about like hazing and whatever, and I'm going to write it to a super poppy beat so that it's like, yay, but you have no idea what, you know, it's kind of tricking you into listening to this like heavy subject matter when it's actually, it's, you know, through the production and the, and whatever, it's portrayed as kind of like lighthearted when it's actually not at all. But I don't think that I've ever really been much of a, I'm going to make a statement, or I want somebody to get exactly what I'm saying, through my words. I think that I can say that till I'm blue in the face about, this is what I meant, this is what I meant. And people are always going to interpret it how they want. And so I think basically this time I'm actually saying what I've always felt, which is like, hey, you know, my relationship with these songs ends the second that I release an album. Like, I have that relationship when I'm writing it, when I'm producing the song, when we're recording it, when we're playing it live. But like, as you know, you guys get to make whatever you want out of it, and that's ultimately what's going to happen anyway. And I feel that way with that's not just with music, obviously, and you could say the same thing about like jazz. It's like, well, I can listen to a jazz song and think like, huh, what is this about? I have no idea. And somebody could say, well, that person's intention was they were writing about the civil rights movement or whatever. And I was like, I have no idea. When I go into a museum and look at an abstract piece of art, I think, that makes me feel this. But it makes my neighbor feel something completely different. And that's what's great about it. And so I guess I just kind of wanted to say the same thing about, you know, songwriting songs.
Yeah. The album has been receiving lots of critical acclaim, and it's a fantastic album. I really enjoyed listening to it.
Thank you.
I want to ask, Stephen Thompson from NPR writes that this album dwells on your current place in that ceaseless coming-of-age process. And many of these songs, it seems, revolve around that theme of growing into your own skin and learning to be comfortable with who you are. Did Thompson capture that in the right way? Did he interpret that in the way you wanted to interpret it? I guess this is all abstract, so this is Thompson's Thompson's view of it. What he took away from this view? Any reflections? Any thoughts?
I guess that was his interpretation of it. I don't mean this in a negative way. It was very singular. It was like, this is a coming of age story about like the fact that like you're never going to grow up all the way. You're always growing up. You're always changing and evolving. And I think that's absolutely true. I agree with that a lot. Yeah.
There's more to this album than that, though. I mean, there's a whole bunch of stories in here as well. Do you see at all this album musically? Did that change? To me, you keep making these jumps and the albums that I've listened to over time. You do these big leaps into these new plateaus. And this to me was another leap into a new place. Musically, are you excited about that process of evolution? And how's that going?
That's a great question, because a lot of people ask that, and it's interesting to hear that outside perspective, because to me that's just like, well, I can hear in this record reflections of my album Golder, and I can hear some of Last War, and I can also hear like some Grandma's Boyfriend, my other band that I have, and all of it to me feels like organically. I've never sat there and go, you know, I want to make a completely different record than the last one, but I can't not do that. I don't know how to not do that is what I'm saying. And I get really bored really easily with staying the same. I don't want to stay the same. I don't want to make the same record. And I'm good at being in that new headspace. So I want to, I have to keep trying to do that as much as possible and branching out with other music or with writing, which, you know, I'm still working on getting over my fear of doing actual storytelling, like and releasing stories that I've written, but I'll get there. And, you know, I want to always try to do new things. And for now, I'm just doing that with music and trying to push the envelope for myself.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I want to play a little bit of the song Kismet Kill here, because I've had it stuck in my head for a few days now.
I like the salt and toss my head.
This song came out earlier, was released, I believe, in a video. Mm-hmm. What's the process of making the video like? How did that go? And has that been able to help you get your songwriting out there maybe in ways that might not otherwise?
Well, I mean, videos are, they're pretty paramount to releasing music now. I mean, you have to have visuals to go along with the music, even if it's just shot with your iPhone. Like, that people just, you know, they want that, they need that, and it is a great way to help promote your music. And it's also great because I've been really lucky to work with a few different directors with three of the songs on this album. That video was really awesome because Nicole Branding, the director, had gotten a grant from Independent Film Minnesota to do a music video with a local artist. So she luckily, you know, asked me to be involved with that. And so we both, like, we mutually benefit from that. But I really loved that she wasn't afraid to kind of cross the something beautiful into something trashy, into, you know, something haunting and mysterious, to something very, like, literal. All of those things tied into that. And my sister Sydney was the star of that video. She's also going to be in another one that's coming out in a month. It was just awesome to be able to, you know, have that, like, tied into it as well. She's like 12 years younger than me. So, of course, I'm like, no, I want to put the young kid in the music video. But I also made a point of not being in the videos this time around, except for that shot of me closing the door at the end of Kismet Kill.
You mentioned the grant that the video producer got for Kismet Kill. Mm-hmm. And how that made, more or less, made that video happen. How important is that kind of support in our society for singer-songwriters, for artists, for musicians? The countries around us, Canada, Mexico, even, they support musicians and artists in a very different way than we do, and the arts in a very different way than we do in this country. How important is that kind of support for musicians and artists in order to keep this going forward?
Well, it's imperative. There are a lot of incredible grant organizations for artists in this country, but there's not nearly enough. And I can say I have applied for many grants and been rejected, many. But when I was writing the songs for my last record, for Last War, I was a new mom. I just, you know, kind of took my kid and we were on our own, and I was terrified. And I applied for the third time for the McKnight grant, the McKnight Fellowship in Minnesota, which is a big one. And I wrote it myself. I was just like, I have to do this. I have to try. And if I don't, then I'm never going to know. And I, again, that was the third time. I'd been rejected two other times and I got it. And I cannot imagine not having that help to make that record and exist the way that I did during that time. Like, it was just absolutely imperative. I had to. And I'm so grateful for that. And it was just an incredible boost, not only for me financially, just to like make, you know, pay my bills and to record this album the way I wanted to do it, but it boosted my morale. Like, I was like, oh wow, what a gift to have these judges who are from all over the world. They're different every time. They don't know you. They don't know anything about you, to validate you as an artist and say, yeah, you are good enough. And like, you should keep doing this. Yeah, there definitely needs to be more state funding. And Minnesota's got a lot of great arts organizations, a lot. But it's kind of sad that you can pick like maybe like five or six states and out of the 50 states that have them in place. And yeah, I certainly think that as a country, we could do more with that, because that seems to be part of the betterment of a society as a whole.
It sounds to me like the McKnight Fellowship is part of why we have this album here now, Impossible Dream. So we're all richer for that. This is a great album. You know, Haley Bonner, thank you for your time. Thank you for joining us today. Let's go out with the song Skins.
Thank you.
That's Skins from Haley Bonner's new CD, Impossible Dream. Bonner visited with SDPB News Director Charles Michael Ray in our Rapid City studio just after the CD's release.